This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, signature support from the office of East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor President Sharon Weston Broom, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. This is the first day, the kickoff of the spring drive, and we certainly request your support every now and then, about two times a year on this show, and this is one of those periods, and it'll be a drive that will be short, but if you have not contributed, we certainly treasure your interest and support of WRKF. And B. Cole tells me we're celebrating National Pet Day and offering a bandana set, one for the pet and the other for the owner. Also, we're doing a dollar-for-dollar match courtesy of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. So we hope we'll hear from you if you have not made your contribution or if it's time to renew. And the number is 855-893-9753, or you can go to WRKF.org, and we always appreciate contributions made during this hour of programming. Again, 855-893-9753. Our number, which you've heard a time or two through the years, 877-217-5757. And Robin Dow is producing, and our leadoff guest is one of the real stalwarts in Louisiana politics for many years. He was mayor for seven terms of Gretna, Ronnie Harris. Quite a guy. He now lives in Baton Rouge. He also was head of the Louisiana Municipal Association for a time. Now he is kind of in retirement, but he's head of his homeowners association, so that's no retirement. And one of his passions, he's spoken on this, I think, three times on our show, is the LSU Annual Book Bazaar. Thousands of books available. And reading books is a lost pastime. Some people, of course, have never read a book, and I'm not kidding. But others read voraciously, and Ronnie Harris is one of those, and I think that's why he likes the Book Bazaar, and it's at the Parker Coliseum. If LSU gets a new arena, that's where it ought to be, the Parker Coliseum, where Bob Pettit and Pete Maravich ruled the world, and it's a building that still is, it's got good bones, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and my comment to what you just said is, because Parker has done wonders for our book sale. Last year, we had record sale, and we donated over $80,000 to the LSU library system. And that money went to pay for special collections. So it's a very, very important event that means a lot in the special things. I know on this show, Jim, you've talked about the condition of the LSU library itself. And look, this is a bake sale when it comes to construction or whatever. But in the meantime, this gives an opportunity to a person to do their part in helping the LSU library.
And a school is often judged by the quality of its library. And even though the building is in deplorable condition, we're talking about the Middleton Library, when you go in there, you can find a lot of good stuff. They have the volumes are good. They've got good material there.
Well, you know what? I want to reach out to the public and say, for those people who are book aficionados, walk into any library of a person who enjoys reading books. That's what you get to enjoy when you come to the Friends of LSU book sale, Friends of LSU Library book sale, because you have a situation where we have over 51,000 books spread out on tables so that you can peruse the category of your choice. We have rare and collectible books, but we also have many on art, architecture, military history, Civil War, and Gulf Coast and the South. If you're interested in politics, there's books there as well, history, environment. A lot of LSU press printings are there as well. So this book sale has dated back, I think the original book sale, I'm told, netted a full $500. So since 1962, this effort by the Friends of LSU Library has grown by leaps and bounds, but that's only because of the support of the public.
1962,
yes.
So this is the 63rd year, the Book Bazaar. It's probably been at the Parker Coliseum every year.
Actually, no, we've only been at the Coliseum twice. And
really?
Yes. And before they had it, I wish I could tell you the names of the buildings, but they're very small, and people had to go back multiple times. And yes, we do have books that we will be putting out during the sale, so that it'll keep it interesting. So we our hours beginning tomorrow at 9 a.m., Friday is 9 to 7, Saturday is April 13th from 9 to 5, and Sunday, April 14th, is 9 to 4. And
tomorrow's 9 to 7 as well?
9 to 7
tomorrow and
9 to 5 on Saturday
and 9 to 4 on Sunday.
And a lot of reason for our success is the outreach, certainly of this show, as well as social media, and the fact that we had a number of tables and space to place all of our books available for public inspection and purchase.
51,000 books available.
At a fraction of their retail value.
Right. And some of them signed, I know, by the authors. You can find some real treasures, even some first editions.
I'll tell you, they're jewels in those stacks. I want to do a shout out. I'm a weekend warrior. I'm there during the book sale itself. But give you an example of the dedication of the volunteers. There's people who have been going for years, twice a week, receiving the books, pricing the books, boxing the books. And so that's how we accumulate these books. A special shout out to Keene's Cleaners. Eileen Keene was one of the original charter members of the Friends of LSU Library in 1962. And Keene's, beginning in May, will be once again accepting donations. And that's a very real part of this equation. Not only do we want people to come and buy the books, but those people who have books that they need to rid their shelves so they can get new books, or estates that wish to donate their books, the Friends LSU Library is the place to go. And we'll be accepting books after mid-May.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Ronnie Harris, the 28-year mayor of Gretna, now lives in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And he went through some stuff, including Katrina as mayor of Gretna. And now he is the guy who's the front man for the LSU Book Bazaar around since 1962. And a listener just quizzing me here, and I'm looking up one answer to make sure. Who was the governor? I know the governor was Jimmy Davis in 62. Who was the mayor of Baton Rouge in 1962? Was it Jack Christian was the mayor?
Oh, really?
John Jack Christian, yeah. But that's a long time ago, so it has stood the test of time. How many books did you sell last year?
We had just about the same number. We had over 50,000 books for sale, and what was amazing, because of the outreach of the public coming through social media and knowing about it, and look, there's free parking next to the Parker Coliseum off of Ag Center
that's
Boulevard.
That's good to know.
Yes, and there will be signs that will point you to that area. Whole aspect has been the number of books we were worried because, you know, people aren't reading books. Mm-hmm. They those who read do Kindle and that sort of thing. But there was a last-minute rush in the past few months where we were able to get not only a number of books that will equal what we had last year, but also CDs and vinyl records and DVDs will be available as well.
Fred in Spanish Town asks if there are books related to Louisiana history. I suspect so.
Absolutely. And in fact, we have a large, not only do we have books of modern vintage, but we also have older vintage as well. For those who are interested in old books, that is a great thing. I purchased actually it was a Time Life series. I was shocked. It was a series, but it was a 1982 gold leaf bound books, and it was talking about the individual experiences of the soldiers of the Civil War, and it was a whole collection of them. And we, as I said, there's series, there's sets, there's Bibles, there, religion is a big category. There's approximately 46 categories of that's available. So anyone who's interested in a book, I'll tell you, this is your nirvana. This is the place to go this weekend, beginning tomorrow morning, Friday at 9 a.m., and going through Sunday.
Friday, 9 to 7, Saturday, 9 to 5, Sunday, 9 to 4. And I'm going to be out of town for much of that, but I think I can make it back Sunday in time to go to the Book Bazaar. And by Sunday, you still have a lot of options, I would think. Do you, and the listener, and I'm going to go ahead and ask it, do you mark down the prices after, do you have a fire sale at the end?
There will be a fire sale at the end. It won't be the same as we had last year, but it'll be 50% off on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were 1,600 cases of books that were delivered on Monday. So we're all set up. We're ready to go. But what we don't want to do is deal with any books at the end. And as I walked the tables at the end of last year, I, through my estimate, we had anywhere from 750 to 1,000 books left on those hundreds of tables, on that 100 tables section. So it was an outstanding success. And, the LSU Library did a small reception, but it was very meaningful to the volunteers. We have people have been going twice a week. And
well, hold that thought. We'll be back to spend a few more minutes with Ronnie Harris, and then we'll hear from Hardell Ward. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. On deck is Hardell Ward, prominent attorney in New Orleans, graduate of Tulane Law School, and he is involved in various social issues, and one of those is the issue that in 2018, Constitutional Amendment 2 passed 64% of the vote, and it ended Louisiana's Jim Crow juries law for crimes committed in which you could be sent to the slammer with a non-unanimous jury verdict. And there is a development or two, and Hardell Ward is here to talk about that. But we're wrapping it up with Ronnie Harris, the charismatic mayor of 28 years for Gretna, Louisiana, and he is the front person for the LSU Book Bazaar tomorrow at the Parker Coliseum on Highland Road, LSU, where Pete Maravich, they called it Pete's Palace at the time, that's where he played all of his games as a stalwart at LSU. And Bob Pettit, of course, led LSU to the Final Four in that building, too. But it's the home of the Book Bazaar tomorrow, 9 to 7, Saturday 9 to 5, and Sunday 9 to 4, 51,000 selections, and at a reduced price, and some real treasures. And a listener asked a good question. How do you get 51,000 books? What's the process?
The generosity of the Baton Rouge folks. And let me say, Jim, you're very generous with your compliments, but I do want to say that Anita Adams is the leader of this group, and I'm just a lone voice in the wilderness trying to promote.
I'm glad you mentioned her. But as you can hear, Mayor Harris is an eloquent man, and he's passionate about this. He's got his game face on. He's ready to go. This is one of the biggest 3 days of your year, isn't it?
I'm in charge of boxes.
Okay, a lot of boxes.
A lot of boxes, and a lot of people will come, and they'll say, can I have a box, because they have a large purchase, and that's what we want people to do. How can you do it? Well, first of all, come to the book sale, number one. And number two,
you can bring books with you if you want to.
No, we don't want to do that. Not now. The time of donations will really be in May. Our volunteers need a break after the book sale, but beginning in May, you can either bring your books to one of Keene's cleaners branches, or you can. And we urge you to call the LSU Book Barn and Friends of LSU Library Facebook page. Friends of LSU Library Facebook page is the place to go. It has the phone number. Make an appointment. The volunteers are there only a couple days a week, certain hours. But yes, that's how we get our books. People come and they bring loads of books. We also have donations from other libraries around the state when they clean their shelves and that sort of thing. So there's something for everyone, whether you're a music aficionado with CDs and DVDs and vinyl records. But the books of so many categories are so interesting. And just the event, even if you're not even interested in a book, you ought to come, because it's quite impressive to walk into that Coliseum and see the thousands of books available. But we want to thank the Baton Rouge public for supporting the LSU Library Book Sale.
Well, the former governor, Buddy Romer, who I used to close Books a Million down with, he told me, you know, he was divorced at the time, and he liked to read books, and he said, I don't go to bars, I'm a diabetic, I can't drink. But he said, you know, I met my wife at Books a Million. So you never know who you're going to meet.
You never know
who you're going to meet when you go. And sometimes the quality of the individual, somebody who likes books, is usually worth talking to, no matter what your preference is, whether you like whatever. But anyway, I would suggest, and you can make friends too. That's a good thing, because people who love books generally mingle together quite well. They like each other's company.
Actually, we've received a few volunteers who just came to the book sale, were so interested in what we did, they've become volunteers, whether it's on the weekend or really throughout the year.
Okay. My friend Mike Wolf, who's on this show often, he told me he went to Austin, Texas, and there was cloud cover. He didn't get much of a view of the eclipse, but you went to Russellville, Arkansas, didn't you?
Outside of Russellville. We do an annual canoe trip, and this year we said we're going to tie it into the eclipse, and it was wonderful. It was kind of a soul experience. You look up, and you see the power of the Almighty. And I can tell you that the 360 degrees around you was either sunrise or sunset, depending on your point of view. I saw the planets, but what was most interesting as well, besides the totality, was the expressions of the people. People were just in awe. It's a special experience, and I was very fortunate to experience that.
Joe and Gretna asked, "Did you were born in Gretna? Or in New Orleans.
I'm originally from Gretna, yes.
Grew up in Gretna. And Joe has a list of famous, somebody from Gretna would be what, a Gretnaite? Or?
Well, yeah, actually, we've called them Gretnaites.
Yeah, okay. I knew Mel Ott and Bishop Ott. They both were from Gretna, but John McDonough, Lash LaRue.
The famous bullwhip movie star.
Frankie Ford
came and played at our first Gretna Heritage Festival. And he was quite a character, and he brought down the house. In fact, I had to borrow, I had to bring our personal piano. He banged on it so much, he busted some keys. It was we have a number of notables from Gretna.
John Forcade, Joe Gao, the only Vietnamese American to be a member of U.S. Congress. And Joe's up to some tomfoolery, but this is a good one. A Gretnation is what... somebody just sent me, Gretnation. But Bianca Del Rio, born Roy Haylock, American actor, drag queen, insult comedian, costume designer, and reality show personality.
I didn't know that one. But no, Gretna has really come a long way since the days of Katrina, when you see the community totally damaged by the storm. We were the jumping off point for a lot of relief agencies. Samaritan's Purse stayed a year to help people in the entire New Orleans area, but they were headquartered in Gretna. So our Heritage Festival in Gretna has grown by leaps and bounds. It's wonderful to see a major act on a stage and look to your right and see an ocean-going vessels passing by and seeing the skyline of New Orleans.
All right, and it was Barbara Clark of WRKF who said she grew up in Gretna, and she is a Gretnation. So, and Ronnie Harris is a Gretnation. They both will probably be present at the Book Bazaar this weekend at LSU. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Mayor.
Well, thank you for having us. Appreciate you.
Take care. We turn the page, and we're joined by Hardell Ward. He's received his BA from Morehouse College, his JD in sports law from Tulane University, and he has been involved in various social issues, and one of those is the non-unanimous jury that used to be the law of Louisiana. You could go to jail for life on a 10-2 verdict. That changed in 2018, but of course many people were in prison as a result of their convictions, and that has been a source of debate, and that's one of the reasons why Hardell Ward is with us, and there will be an event at the Capitol. Actually, it was yesterday, or day before, I believe. But a group of people with concerns about where we are in Louisiana, as hundreds of people remain incarcerated with these kinds of verdicts. And good morning to you, Hardell Ward.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us where we are on this.
Where we are now, the last bill that we were on the Capitol on Tuesday, SB 383, it did not get out of committee. There are two other bills that are filed that could address the this issue. We're still watching to see if there's time to get scheduled and where they can go in the committee, in their committee and their path forward. we're still going to be hopeful and we're still going to support those bills, but you know, we are running out of time with the regular session, and I saw there were some news reports of the proposed constitutional convention that still may occur. The legislatures have been up there since January with special session, so we're kind of imagining that we may not be able to get through another hearing on the other two bills. But so where we are now is there's over 800 men and women throughout Louisiana who have unconstitutional illegal convictions who still are incarcerated. And what we're pushing for is that meaningful relief. We've been going at this since 2018, trying to find some relief for them under the law. Courts have said that there is no legal right for them to get relief, but the legislatures can still act. The conversation we've had with the legislatures and with people across the political aisles and with the people in the community and throughout the state have been, they understand that this is a problem, but what is the solution? Been talk of panels and review panels and such, and we keep coming back. The only real mechanism.
Okay, we do have to take a break, but we will return with Hardell Ward, who represents Promise of Justice, and we're back after this. This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. And once again, we seek your support for WRKF. 877-217-5757 to get in with Hardell Ward in our remaining moments with him. And Mark Ballard is on deck. But we do wish to have you as part of the family. There are about 4,000, a little over 4,000 members who have WRKF. And we know we have far more listeners than that. We've been around now for 1980 to the present. So according to my math, that's 44 years. And if you can contribute $44 or a bit more than that, we would appreciate your support at 855-893-9753. And we, of course, have something for you. This is National Pet Day, and a bandana set, one for the pet, one for you, the owner. A dollar-for-dollar match from the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. 855-893-9753 or WRKF.org. Wrapping it up with Hardell Ward, and his group is one of a few activist groups in the state who are making the case to the Louisiana legislature that if a person can't be convicted today with a non-unanimous jury, those who are in prison who were convicted that way should at least get a retrial, and the Louisiana legislature does have the power and responsibility to make this change. But we do have a mantra right now that we're going to be tough on crime. So it would seem, and a listener makes a good point, that this may not be a good time to make your case. Hardell Ward, how do you answer those who say this is a futile effort for your group, Promise of Justice?
No, I would disagree. This is the greatest of times. When you're looking at being tough on crime, part of it is getting it right, is making sure that people you convicted need to be convicted. The simple fact is individuals convicted by non-unanimous jury, many of them are innocent. One of our testifiers, Jermaine Hudson, was incarcerated for 22 years for a crime that never occurred. If we don't make the case to look at these cases, you're not being tough on crime. You're simply incarcerating folks. And now is the time, while we're thinking about our criminal justice system, thinking about our incarceration system, now is the time to, I think we need to hold firm that if we want to bring this swift justice, this hard justice to Louisiana, that we do so because we know the person is actually guilty. And we cannot say that for the 800 or so who are still incarcerated. We can't make that statement. In fact, we know many of them are innocent. We know many of them simply never got their fair trials. So that is why I think now is the perfect time. And there's the human element of we started with over 1,000 people. Now we're down to 800. People are dying in these jails. They're dying with convictions that go against the Constitution. So we can't stop and wait for a better time. We have to move forward. Their lives are on the line, and our criminal justice system is on the line. We have to remove the tumor that's on the soul of our criminal justice system so we can stand by it if we decide to increase penalties, to make it harder for individuals to prove their innocence. We should at least address those who we know did not get a fair opportunity in the first place.
We thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to an update soon. Hardell Ward, appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We're joined now by Mark Ballard, man in the Beltway, covering politics near and far. And he logged a generation at the state capitol. I'm sure he's keeping an eye from afar on what's happening at the house that Huey built and the new governor's an active fellow. And I think it was Dane Sherman who tagged him with the nickname Huey P. Landry. Do you miss the state capitol, Mark Ballard?
Oh, sometimes, because it's a lot simpler. Everything is out on your sleeve. In the state capitol in a way that it's not here. And then at the same time, it's also not as partisan up here. The partisan rancor up here is real, very real, and it seems to overwhelm everything else that's on the table. You didn't see it down there. It was more of a social issues, and there is partisanship, but not quite in the same way.
877-217-5757, and a listener asked, did Mark Ballard ever converse with Mike Johnson when he was a member of the Louisiana legislature? And I'm sure he did. Mike Johnson, he was not that prominent, but he was kind of like John Kennedy. He found a way to, in those days, to get to the microphones, and he did it well. And it hasn't been that long ago, has it? He was a member of the Louisiana House of Representatives from 2015 to 2017. So put that in perspective. And 7 years later, this guy who was only in the Louisiana House for 2 years is Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives. It is a remarkable rise, isn't it?
It is. It was a lot of luck along the way. To answer the question, though, I covered him, talked to him a lot during that time, and back also when he was a lawyer for a conservative religious organization. So I've been talking to him since
he was the guy who sued the abortion clinics, one in Baton Rouge in particular. But you wrote a story in yesterday's Advocate. U.S. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is ramping up her effort to fire Mike Johnson from his House Speaker post. And she, of course, has some followers. And Mike Johnson used to be in that camp, but now that he has what amounts to an executive position in the legislative branch, his tune has changed and they don't like the tune, but some Democrats may rescue him. Where does it stand? Is he walking a tightrope that's about to break?
Boy, if we were doing hockey, I mean, he just gets so many shots on goal that's all he can do is seem to block those shots. Tomorrow, we're going to hear from the Prime Minister of Japan in about 30 minutes, and then they're going to do a couple of quick, easy votes and then head home, which was not what their plan was originally. Mike Johnson will be going down to Mar-a-Lago to visit with Donald Trump and hopefully get that a photograph of him standing next to Donald Trump at some point. And that, I think, is an effort to try to sort of tamp down a little bit of this let's get rid of Mikey thing, which is going on among Marjorie Taylor Greene and a handful of the far right. Not a lot. I'm not sure what kind of traction she's getting, but it sure enough would be enough traction that if they got a vote, she only needs two and he's out. Unless the Democrats rally to his support, which is going to, put a real problem for him down the road in being the leader of the Republican Party, which he is the highest elected leader right now. So
877-217-5757, and Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network News Director, has informed me that O.J. Simpson has died, number 32, 30 years ago on June 12th, 1994, he killed his wife and her friend. He was found not guilty, then found liable in a civil court. But he did serve 9 years in prison in Nevada for stealing his own memorabilia with a gun in Nevada. But O.J. Simpson had a full life. Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer, Pro Football Hall of Famer. Born July 9th, 1947, he was 76 years old. 877-217-5757. James in Metairie. James, you're on with Mark Ballard.
Well, thank you, Jim, and hello, Mark. Good morning. Let's not never forget that it was little Mikey MAGA Johnson who led an effort in the House, signed by more than 100 House Republicans, supporting a Texas lawsuit to invalidate the 2020 election. He's not an innocent young man. Now, I am very concerned about what's going on in the House of Representatives. We have reports by Mike Turner and others that Republicans in the House are just eating up Russian propaganda in that effort to defund or not fund the U.S. Funding of the war in Ukraine.
And Marjorie Taylor Greene, as you noted in your story, is faulting Mike Johnson for his efforts to make further funding for Ukraine against Russia. And many of these people, they're not only anti-Ukraine, they're pro-Putin. They think Vladimir Putin's a good guy, and obviously Tucker Carlson has some acolytes in the U.S. House of Representatives. But Mark, what about James's comments?
Well, I mean, yes, he's correct about that. I mean, Mike Johnson was the author of a way that Republicans could support the Trump's election theories and without actually having to, you know, jump on board with the crazy. It was overturned over and over again. And, you know, and he, Johnson himself, has never said one way or the other about the elections, does recognize Joe Biden as the president, you know. So I know a lot of people don't like him because of his stances, but I need to point out that his stances are 4x4, right in the middle of what the Southern Baptist Convention believes, and that's representative of about 14 million people.
877-217-5757. Patrick in Ennisuelda State. You're on with Mark Ballard. Patrick.
Hey, you guys were talking about partisanship, and I guess a news story I want to talk about is this Yuri Berliner with NPR. And he brought up the fact that, and I'm not going to get in the weeds with everything he said. Everybody can read what he said. But one thing he said is that the news today, it seems to be driven by political ideology. In other words, journalists do it based on their political views instead of just digging for the facts, the evidence, and the truth.
All right. Well, there is truth to that, but there is also truth that in radio, the medium that you're participating in right now, most of the commentators who do talk shows, like 97-98% of them, are from the conservative side. We'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard is with us, and Patrick in Ennisuelda State just called, and he made the case that he thought that the media are largely liberal. Well, as I've stated, the media in radio, which is where I've spent about 90% of my career, the media are largely conservative, as in very conservative, as in some cases outrageously conservative. And the media and radio, talk show hosts, and those on television at Fox News and in other places like Newsmax, they went over and over and over and over about how they had this unimpeachable witness against Hunter Biden. And Mark Ballard said on this show, in a response to a question from Patrick in Ennisuelda States, there was no evidence against Hunter Biden that was credible. Turns out Mark was right, and the witness, the unimpeachable one, is now in jail for lying to the FBI, allegedly. But here's a story, New York Times yesterday. Jared Kushner's investment fund is not especially large by global finance standards, but as he sets it up, each step is bringing into view ethical issues that would only grow if his father-in-law, Donald Trump, becomes president again. Now, remember, Kushner worked in the White House. His $3 billion fund is financed almost entirely from overseas investors with whom he worked when he served as a senior advisor to Donald Trump. He's taken money from government wealth funds in Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, as well as from a founder of Foxconn, the Taiwan-based electronics manufacturer whose role in Mr. Kushner's firm has not previously been disclosed. 99% of the money placed with him by investors has come from foreign services, collecting almost $40 million a year, Affinity Partners, Mr. Kushner's firm is, in management fees from those investors before even any share of profits has been earned on investments. So there you go. This is $3 billion we're talking about here. Why isn't Mike Johnson and the House of Representatives on Jared Kushner the same way they were on Hunter Biden, when it appears there's far more credible evidence, if you will, against Jared Kushner? And he worked in the White House, unlike Hunter Biden. Mark Ballard, your thoughts.
Okay, let me go back to Patrick in all states and that, oh, we're just reporting. You should have like an entire program on this, in my mind, is that we're just reporting based on what our political biases are. And I would say that the readers are just reading because they're too lazy. We don't have biased reporters. We have lazy readers. Ever since the very beginning of the founding of the Republic and even before, you always had biased reporters reporting the way that they saw it to be. And it was up to the reader to kind of sort through this side and that side and the other side to try to figure out, you know, what they believe to be the truth. So the issue is not biased reporters. The issue is lazy readers. And as far as what you're saying here is that, you know, yes, there is partisan rancor on there, this business over the Mayorkas immigration trial in the Senate, which is, let's point out that the very same Republicans who are pushing for the trial, we've got to have a trial, it's all part of the protocol, were the very same people who were, back when they were trying to impeach Trump, trying to block the trial, trying to dismiss the trial before it ever came out, trying to avoid the trial at all costs. And so that Jared Kushner, you know, and these issues, I mean, that is what you have a media for, is to kind of push, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats, whoever's in power, to do what they said they were going to do back when they were trying to get another point across.
Well, you wrote in your story yesterday, another one, Mark generally covers more than one story per day. U.S. Senator John Kennedy took to the Senate floor Monday night to warn his Democratic colleagues not to toss away like spam the articles of impeachment the House filed against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas in a dispute over border security. Now, Chuck Schumer has said that policy matters should never be a source of impeachment, articles of impeachment. He's right, of course. We had a guy call the show the other day and said Jeff Landry should be impeached because he doesn't like the way Jeff Landry's running the state. But to my knowledge, Jeff Landry's doing it within the boundaries of the law. He was duly elected. He's got every right to go in whatever direction he wants to. It's not up to the legislature to impeach him, to get rid of him because they don't like him, and that's not going to happen here. But what about John Kennedy saying the Democrats are basically shielding Mayorkas from the kind of scrutiny and the kind of going out to pasture treatment he should receive?
I would say that's exhibit one of my previous statement about how back when Trump was up for immigration, that the senators, those same senators, tried to block having a trial and dismiss it and that sort of thing. I mean, there's a big argument as to whether the two indictments against Mayorkas that was approved by the House by one single vote on its second time and would not be approved now because they don't have the votes anymore if everybody stayed the same. And they're saying that what he was doing or what he allegedly did does not rise to high crimes and misdemeanors because he was following the law as it was set and presented to him. And so they're saying it would be a big, Mitt Romney is saying this is would be a big waste of time. I'm unsure of all of that, but the idea that there needs to be a trial and that there may be one next week, they postponed it because the senators, there's a strict clock, and they postponed it till next week because the Republicans didn't have their votes in a row, and what they were really afraid of was hitting Thursday and getting out of Washington, which is what they will leave sometime this afternoon to go back home. And they were afraid that they would lose their long-term trial where they can present all of this evidence on the border by Thursday, because everybody wanted to go home. So that's why they're going to, or that's one of the reasons why they're going to be pushing it off till next week, so that they can hold a trial and they can bring out all of this border stuff.
A New York appeals court judge has rejected Donald Trump's latest attempt to delay his hush money criminal trial set to start next Monday. It took just 12 minutes to swat aside an argument that it should be postponed while the former president fights a gag order. Now, the star witness, at least one of them, will be Stormy Daniels, the source of the hush money. And a listener asks a good question. Why would a man who wrote The Art of the Deal pay somebody $130,000 to be quiet about something that never happened? That's really not the source. It was Bob and Broadmoor who asked that. That's not really the source of the case. The case is about how the money was used, and it was obviously done in a way that was designed to conceal. But at any rate, Mark, it would appear that Donald Trump, based on what happened in the E. Jean Carroll trial when a New York jury found him liable for sexually assaulting her in a department store, that he may not fare well in a New York courtroom.
Yes, I agree that this is probably not going to end well from his point of view. But then on the other hand, just as with the Jean Carroll trial, is that he will probably get a lot of points. He has supporters that are going to support him no matter what. And in fact, you know, as you recall that last week, he tried to equate his situation to the one that Nelson Mandela faced in South Africa, you know, that the deep state is out to get him.
Well, Nelson,
so it may turn out well for him.
Well, Nelson Mandela served 27 years in prison too. Donald Trump has not served one day in prison. But it is something that there's four trials, and this one, according to legal analysts, as far as offenses, if he's found guilty, and he may not be, but if he's found guilty, most legal analysts would say this one is the least of his sins, but this is the one that may very well result in a conviction before his election. But he will be appealing, so chances are he will be eligible to run. And he may win. And we are in an interesting time, aren't we, Mark?
Yes. And apparently he can serve. I mean,
he can serve from jail.
He can still serve as president.
He can serve from a jailhouse. Yeah.
Far more interesting than our normal run-of-the-mill presidential campaign.
And you think that, you know, Gary Hart was run out of politics with a consensual relationship with a Phi Beta Kappa, and there was a Louisiana angle to that, too. It was Billy Broadhurst who took him to Bimini on the monkey business, and Donna Rice was born in New Orleans, and Stormy Daniels was born in Baton Rouge. So there you go. Max in Mid-City. Max, you're on with Mark.
Yeah. Good morning, guys. Back to Mike Johnson, and I have no wish to bail him out or make excuses because I think he's crazy. But can anybody actually serve as Republican House Speaker? At this point, you have a two-seat majority, and on any single spending bill, you're going to have a group of at least 20 on either side.
All right. He makes a good point that it seems to be impossible for a Republican to please all the disparate elements within the party.
Well, it certainly, yes. And I think Mike Johnson would agree with you on that. And I think that Kevin McCarthy, at least on Tuesday when he was speaking before Georgetown, agreed with that it, right now it's just nobody can lead this. And I think that's also the big saving point for Mike Johnson, because Republicans or 20 or 30 of them want to get rid of him. But then what? You know, and they're going into an election showing absolutely that they can't govern. And so that may be his saving grace when all is said and done.
Well, Mark, always good to catch up with you. Thank you for your fiery response to Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Always good to hear from Mark Ballard, a career journalist who takes his craft seriously. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.